It was a pledge U.S. President Donald Trump made back in 2017. And on Monday, his administration made it a reality, formally notifying the United Nations that the United States will withdraw from the Paris Agreement. In a bid to boost U.S. oil, gas, and coal industries, Trump had vowed to pull out of the accord, citing an economic disadvantage if it were to remain part of it.
A U.S. appeals court on Monday ruled that President Donald Trump's longtime accounting firm must hand over 8 years of tax returns to New York City prosecutors. The decision is the latest setback for Trump in his efforts to keep his finances secret. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance issued a subpoena to the Mazars accounting firm as part of a criminal probe into Trump and his family real estate business.
It will create the world's most valuable listed company. That much we know about Saudi Aramco's planned share sale. Pretty much everything else remains a mystery. The oil giant's chairman fired the starting gun on Sunday. If the sale raises more than $25 billion, it will be the biggest IPO of all time. But details were scant. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman wants a $2 trillion valuation. That's about twice the worth of Apple or Microsoft, currently the world's most valuable listed firms.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's November 5th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day here getting underway. Lots going on in the world. We'll update you on as much of it as possible, especially the business news you need to get your day started. We will hit the markets here momentarily. Get to some of the business ticker stories as well. On the program today, Mary Wisniewski, transportation reporter at the Chicago Tribune, will be with us. There's a couple of big transportation stories that we're going to hit Mary with this morning and get some feedback and some information on. One of them, if you live near or around O'Hare, you might be noticing it being a little bit more quiet in the days to come. We'll talk a little bit about this fly quiet plan. That'll be first up this morning. A little bit later in the program, culture czar Will Scott will be here. Will is the author of The Culture Fix, Solving C-Suite Problems at the Ground Level. We've got a couple of culture learning moments this week, one involving McDonald's, the other involving Buffalo Wild Wings, one involving a relationship between the CEO and an employee, the other involving allegations of employee racism. Will join us at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up nearly a third, 84 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures up about a third as well. The trading day well underway in Europe, with markets in London higher by nearly a third, in Germany up by nearly a quarter percent, in France up by nearly a quarter percent as well. Trading day ending in Asia, the Nikkei up nearly 401 points, nearly 2%. In Hong Kong, up by nearly 0.5%. In China, up by nearly 0.5% as well. And oil is trading at $57.03 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning from the business ticker. Caterpillar is laying off 120 temporary workers at a plant in Texas as a result of the Trump administration's trade war with China. The cuts will impact workers at a hydraulic excavator factory. The heavy equipment manufacturer has seen its Asian sales drop 13%. Due to shrinking Chinese demand and competition from lower-cost domestic rivals. A picture-perfect launch for Boeing capsule Monday, designed to carry astronauts into space. It was the first major test flight of the escape system. Only two of the three main parachutes deployed upon landing in the New Mexico desert, but Boeing doesn't expect that to impact next month's launch to the International Space Station. The first crew on a mission on board the Starliner, as it's called, is set for next year. And a second top executive is out at McDonald's just one day after the burger giant parted ways with its CEO. The chief people officer, David Fairhurst, is out of the company effective immediately. The company didn't say if it had any connection with the firing of CEO Steve Easterbrook, who was fired Sunday for violating company policy, having a consensual relationship with an employee. Easterbrook will receive 26 weeks of pay. In a severance package, but forfeit millions of unvested stock options as part of his severance agreement. Let's begin front and center this morning with transportation, a business of transportation. Mary Wisniewski is the transportation reporter at the Chicago Tribune. It's back with us this morning here on the opening bell. Mary, good morning. Welcome back to WGN.
Good morning, Steve.
I don't know if I've noticed this or not. It feels like last night I didn't hear as many jets flying over my house. I live in Uptown. But if perhaps I am hearing something called the Fly Quiet Plan.
That's right. This is a plan that's been tested before, and now they're bringing it on for several months. The idea is not to eliminate nighttime jet noise because they can't do that. The jets still have to fly overnight. But it's the plan is designed to spread the pain of the noise a little bit more equitably. Previously to this week, O'Hare was using just the parallel east-west runways at night. And so if you're living on the north side of the city, as you are, Steve, or if you're living in the suburbs due west of O'Hare, like Bensonville, you'd be hearing noise every night. And so under this plan, it would alternate so that they'd mix in diagonal runways. So an east-west runway would be used 1 week, and then a diagonal runway the next week, and then back to east-west. With adjustments made depending on the weather. So I don't think it's your imagination. I think you might have been hearing less noise.
Well, this sounds like it's a pretty cool deal. Is this going to be ongoing, or is this a temporary thing that they're doing?
This is going to be going for 28 weeks through May 17th, and then there's going to be work scheduled to begin on a runway 4R 22L, and then they're going to have to stop it for a while and go back to the old way of doing things. And then the plan is supposed to resume after the summer construction season on September 13th, and then it's going to be in place again for 20 weeks through February 2021, and then it's going to have to end because there's going to be construction on the big runway, a 9R extension. And then after that, the O'Hare Noise Compatibility Commission, which is this group of towns and schools that work on noise issues, they're going to see if they can come up with another plan for 2021.
This is a big issue for people who live in the path of O'Hare, or you mentioned Bensonville. Of course, these big jets come over Uptown as well, north side of the city. Mm-hmm. Just talk to us a little bit about how serious this has been over the years, and how much a week off here and there is going to impact people's feelings.
Well, it's for decades, people around the airport have complained about jets going over the houses, rattling their china, disrupting their sleep, interfering with outside barbecues. And complaints got higher after the city began shifting traffic to from the diagonal runways to these newer parallel east-west runways. The Federal Aviation Administration prefers these parallel runways because it's more predictable. They think it's safer to have the runways kind of all going in one direction. Of course, the problem with that is that it really concentrated the noise over the communities just east and west of the airport. The people, not everyone's happy with this plan, of course. I've been hearing from people in Park Ridge and from Des Plaines saying, hey, we don't want this. This is now directing the noise over where we live.
Yeah, and it's interesting in your story, which appears in the Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com as well, you talked to a group, one of the chairman of the Fair Allocation in Runways group, and they compared this to rearranging the chairs, deck chairs on the Titanic.
Right, exactly. Their point is that the jet noise is still unbelievably loud for people living around the airport, and that also that people around the airport have problems with pollution. And that the noise is intolerable and that it's causing people to move away from places around the airport. One of the things that people are waiting for is for the FAA to complete a study about airport noise the results would be to possibly raise the level of tolerance, saying, it used to be this level and now it should be a higher level so that more people can get insulation for their homes.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what are some of the other solutions? I know you mentioned the Noise Commission is going to be re-examining some of this. Besides that, in this plan, are there other solutions out there?
I think the other solutions out there are going to be something that happens in time. Jets, in general, have become quieter over the decades because of changes in their technology. I grew up in Roselle, and I remember, the noise out there being enormous, a couple of decades, three decades ago, and now it's quieter because the jets are quieter, and I think that's a process that's going to continue, but that's not going to be soon enough for a lot of the people who are living around there now.
Yeah, and I have an uncle, an older uncle, who will always say, we can put a man on the moon, why can't we make these jets quieter?
Well, they can, but it's just taking a while, and it's definitely an improvement over what it was, but it's definitely still not there yet, and people are still complaining about their plaster shaking and their dishes shaking and not being able to get to sleep at night.
Mary has a couple of really good transportation stories this week. Well, she does every week as well, but I want to focus in on one of them, and that is this tax on rideshare trips that has been proposed in the city. Mary, this is going to be one of the biggest rideshare taxes in the country, isn't it?
It will be the biggest. It will be bigger even than New York's is the highest right now with $2.75. And so the highest tag, if the city council approves this, it would be a $3 tax on solo rideshare trips downtown during peak hours.
The goal here is to generate money. I know the mayor is looking for all kinds of funding sources, but how is this going to impact ride sharing and commuting?
Well, the idea is not just to generate money, though, of course, that's part of the motivation, but also to reduce traffic congestion downtown. If you've driven downtown, if you walk downtown, you know that it's more crowded than it used to be. This is something that Lori Lightfoot has been talking about since her campaign. And that rideshare, you know, the increase in rideshare, the rideshare has increased 271% in the year since it's come on, and that a lot of the rides, most of the rides are, you know, in some of the busier areas. And the idea is to give people an incentive to, instead of if they're riding downtown during rush hour, to take the CTA instead. The CTA has complained that it has lost ridership as a result of rideshare in recent years. And this has been a complaint in other cities, too. Other cities are also looking to increase their rideshare fees.
Yeah, and this is probably going to be something that happens because, as you mentioned, the climate aspect of this, the impact on the climate, the congestion, all those things. Anybody who's been in one of these areas knows exactly how congested it is. Do you think that's going to have an effect, or will people just absorb some of these costs?
I think that if it's $3, I think that's going to start changing some behavior. One of the controversies about this is outside of downtown. Rideshare trips in Chicago are currently a flat 72 cents per ride, wherever you take it. And under this plan, that would actually drop to 65 cents if you ask for a pool trip and if it's outside of downtown. But then it's going to increase for single riders. So the idea is to incentivize people to take pool trips and, you know, not have as many cars on the road. But some people, there's going to be a news conference at City Hall this morning from some ministers complaining that rideshare has been wonderful for people living on the south side, on the west side, where cabs historically have not gone, and that this has been really useful for seniors and for people who might have a hard time taking a CTA bus, and that this could potentially increase rates on them. Though it should be pointed out that if you're taking a pool trip and if you're outside of downtown, the tax is actually going to go down.
Mary, there's another really cool story, and at first I thought it was kind of a joke, but maybe it isn't. There's a new board game out about CTA. Talk to us a little bit about this.
Sure. This is Transit Tees, which is a company in Chicago that makes CTA-themed and Chicago-themed merchandise, and has a relationship with the CTA, has come up with a board game that imitates riding on the L system. And I've played it, and it's fun. What you do is that every player gets five stops that they have to go to, by rolling dice and moving their little pieces around. And you have to, the idea is to be the first person to get back to Staten Lake Station.
It's very funny. And the board actually looks like the map of the CTA, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The board is very cool, and the pieces are very cool because they're little wooden pieces that are shaped like L cars. And then as the currency for the game is the old CTA tokens, which people will remember from before we had electronic cards. You used to get these little CTA tokens, and these are carved CTA tokens that you can move around. And you can do things like, put construction cones where you think that your opponents are going to go, and, you can take them and get up to Wrigley Field against their will, which messes up their progress. So there's different ways. It takes luck and it takes strategy, which is kind of like the way it feels to get around Chicago. You need luck and strategy.
Absolutely. A sick passenger here, a slow area of track there, maybe a construction project there. It sounds fun.
Right. Yeah. I played it with my family and we found it fun. Transit Tees had previously done a board game called Loop, which just involved the loop and kind of was a little bit like Crazy Eights, and this is a little bit more elaborate.
All right, Mary, we appreciate you being on, sharing your reporting with us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Mary Wisniewski, transportation reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. We'll link out to her stories this morning. But you can find them online as well at chicagotribune.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell, where we'll change our conversation this morning now to the business of the workplace and culture. Will Scott, Culture Czar, an author of The Culture Fix, Solving C-Suite Problems at the Ground Level, is back with us this morning. We've had a couple of learning moments this week, Will. Good morning. Welcome into the program again.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I say learning moments because the one involves the CEO of McDonald's who's out after having a consensual relationship with somebody at work. The other involves the suburban wild Buffalo Wild Wings where there is a racial incident. I want to begin with the McDonald's things first. Is this a culture thing or is this an HR thing?
Well, I guess it's both, Steve, really. As you know, I really care about culture, and I care about, do companies who define their culture with some core values, do they actually live by those core values? And in the case of McDonald's, and then there's the policies and procedures, which are slightly different, mm-hmm. but of course they're connected. And, I mean, the good thing in this case is that one of the first core value that McDonald's talk about is responsible leadership. I think it's quite clear that as an organization and a company and a board, they have shown responsible leadership here.
Yeah, because if you have a rule, and I know you've brought the actual verbiage of the rule, if you have a rule that says you can't date anybody that you supervise, well, that's a big deal.
Yes, so on the policies and procedures side, McDonald's have a clear policy, which I found on the internet, it's available there, around dating. And it specifically says about dating, you know, that a relationship where it could be compromised, right? Or at least fair decision-making could be compromised if there is a relationship, even if it's consensual, where there is reporting, indirect or direct reporting lines. And they, I think, acted on this policy.
Yeah, and for Steve Easterbrook, it's a costly mistake, or if it is a mistake, it sounds like he may have done it on purpose to a certain extent, but it's going to cost him a lot of money.
That's right. So it looks like the mistake he made, because McDonald's have a very clear policy. If you are dating, you should declare it, or if you intend to date mm-hmm. within the company, you should declare it to the human resources professional. And it looks like he didn't do that. Looks like it was something was leaked, and then the board had to do an investigation. And so, yeah, he looks better as a result of that, which is why, again, it's always better to comply mm-hmm. with the core values and policies and procedures. Whether you're an individual or a company, comply with, do what you say you're going to do, you know.
Even if you do comply, what is the impact of having people who you work with who are having relationships? Does that impact the culture of a company in some negative way?
Well, of course, we know it happens, and I think as you yourself said before we went on the air, Steve, people often meet their match, their mate, their life partner in the workplace, and it's just there's a clear distinction, I think, between where there is a direct reporting line that could compromise values or compromise decisions being made optimally in the favor of the organization. And most companies would say, look, if you're going to work here and you're going to subscribe to our policies and procedures and conform to our culture, you need to sign up for our definition of that.
But it can be positive in some cases. I'm sure you've seen examples of this, and with your work in examining culture and being the culture czar, are there positive stories where you have people, you know, having relationships at work and it's good for the morale?
Well, yes, of course there are. And it begins with many small businesses where even married couples or people in a relationship are actually leading a company, starting and leading small businesses. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between that and large publicly traded companies, isn't there? And again, I think some even large public companies will tolerate that as long as there is not, like if the two individuals are working in completely different departments or completely different parts of the business. So again, there isn't that opportunity for compromise.
Because, you know, the negative part of this is I'm watching a relationship happen at work between a coworker and our boss. And then all of a sudden I see our coworker becoming promoted, getting promoted and having opportunities that I'm not getting. Well, that's where it begins, right?
And that can be the danger, can't it? Yes, yeah. Yes. People want to believe that that is based purely on merit and not for some other reason.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us about if we're in this situation and the company's not handling it well. What can we do as employees to make sure that we keep our culture sort of on a even keel and not freak out over something like this?
Yeah, well, it helps. In the case of McDonald's, where really there is a very detailed policies and procedures manual, and there are hotlines and things like that for companies to follow, anonymous hotlines too. So that makes it, I think, very safe for employees to work in an environment like that, where they can simply follow stated policy and procedure and take access of something like a hotline.
In your work, is it better to have just an unwritten culture? I guess the question I'm asking here, when we get to see all of these different rules and regulations, do those negatively impact culture, good culture?
No. So I think the fundamental and most important thing for all employees, before you start getting to benefits like salary and healthcare and all that sort of thing, is to feel safe. And that's just not a value for an employee. That's actually a value for humans that goes back to when we were cavemen, you know. Yeah. We want to feel safe in our environment. And, you know, some bad cultures, employees don't feel safe. They don't feel like they can express themselves. So the more that a culture is defined and providing safety for that employee to be themselves, to be their best, the better. So I think, no, I don't think, I think policies and procedures are necessary today.
The other learning moment story this week comes from Buffalo Wild Wings in the suburbs, where they had a situation with alleged employee racism. You talk about employees wanting to feel safe at work. Well, customers want to feel safe coming into a place of work too, don't they?
I love the segue. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, that's a great point. Especially if you are a minority and perhaps and there's some history around and you're a little nervous about what the experience might be. So yes, again, in the case of Buffalo Wild Wings, what I see is that they had clearly stated values. You know, they actually state that they value customers as their number one value and they value employees as their number two value. And then they also have documented policies and procedures that they expect employees to sign up for. So this incident occurred. It's a pretty ugly incident, frankly, for the organization. But they handled it, as far as I can see, to this point, admirably in terms of following their own policies and procedures. They investigated and then they acted by terminating the employees that, frankly, not only made bad decisions, but didn't follow the ethical code that is stated by Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, and for those of you who are listening who haven't heard this story yet, the employees' family came in, a group of people came in, and they didn't want to sit, another customer didn't want to sit next to this group of people because of their skin color.
Yeah.
And they were asked to move, and then eventually this other group of people left. It feels like that... why would a group of employees feel empowered to do even that, to make that even happen?
Well, it's extraordinary, isn't it? So you do wonder. But one thing that I can say is that they weren't following company values and they weren't following company procedures. So they were out of line, and I think that they had the consequences of that. It was very distasteful the way they handled that situation. And perhaps they were bringing their own personal values to work, but that's the great thing about defining corporate values is that when you're in the corporation, you're expected to comply with corporate values, mm-hmm. not your own personal values.
Right. What do you think is going on behind the scenes at Buffalo Wild Wings in the days since this is happening? Do you think there are refresher courses happening? Do you think that there's corporate-wide communications about how these policies should be handled?
Yeah, so training, of course, is a very big part of it. But as with any major corporate incident, I mean, things go wrong, right? Mm-hmm. You've got hundreds of thousands of employees, millions of employees, in the case of McDonald's, I think it is. The test of leadership is how do you perform when an incident occurs or something goes wrong? So what I would hope Buffalo Wild Wings are doing behind the scenes is, yes, step one is investigate. Step two is take action against the employees that behaved inappropriately. Step three is they're doing something to take care of that family and that team that got out of line. They went down the street for their birthday celebration dinner. And if I was Buffalo Wild Wings, I'd be making sure there's plenty of free dinners going around for those guys to come and enjoy a positive experience at Buffalo Wild Wings. I'd probably fly into town too. I'd go to Naperville and make sure that I, as CEO of that company, are making a point about what my values are and the corporate values that they set in the 1980s when they started this chain.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's, there are so many examples of where this kind of thing has not been handled well. Just in recent years, we've seen all kinds of cases. I'm not going to pull any out, but I think people know that there have been corporate incidents where, you know, it's dragged on for days and sometimes weeks, and publicity's gotten out of hand, and there's social media that's involved in all of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
yeah.
This could have gone the other way.
Well, another one that broke yesterday is Under Armour, right? Where not only their results not what they predicted they would be, but they announced that they are under an investigation for accounting practices. And it's been going on for 2 years, and now is when they're first declaring that to the public. So yes, you're right. Very often these things do get swept under the rug. People hope to hide them, but best policy is always, as soon as you've got some dirty laundry in the company, is to air it and address it as quickly and show strong leadership around that.
Do the two companies, I know the stock price at McDonald's was down a little yesterday. Wild Wings, as you mentioned, has been handling this, but do the company, does especially Wild Wings, risk having this racism thing hang over their heads even after they've handled it like they've handled it?
They do risk it. So, you know, one of the members of that party went on their social platform and posted, and very quickly it had something like 4,000 interactions, you know. So yes, that's all it takes is one incident, one person posting something to really tarnish a company's relationship. But again, if they act well enough and strongly enough in favor of their culture and their stated policies, they will recover from this. But yeah, it is hard. I mean, incidents like Denny's, of course, had this an incident like this a few years ago. I think people still remember that. So yeah, to make sure it never happens is better. Training, stated policies, make sure your culture, which is defined as core values, and not just words on the wall, Steve, but really are being lived and breathed by the leadership and by everybody in the company, and by the leaders of every store in the case of Buffalo Wild Wings.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you coming in and giving us your analysis on this morning. Any parting advice as we head off to work to improve our own cultures?
Yeah, perhaps let's finish on the note that I was just talking about, which is have a stated culture, make sure it's alive and thriving and driving the performance of the organization. And it's not just platitudes or words on a wall, which actually people are not really paying attention to.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Steve.
Will Scott, culture czar, author of The Culture Fix, Solving C-Suite Problems at the Ground Level.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 62 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher by about 0.25% each as well. Positive trading day in Europe and also in Asia this morning as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The weekly crop harvest reports from USDA yesterday showed 52% of the nation's corn acres had been harvested by Sunday night. That's below the five-year average of 75%. Checking our states, Illinois, 58% harvested, normally 88% by this date. Indiana, 57% of the corn acres harvested. They'd normally have 77% by this date. Iowa, 43%, compared to an average of 72%. And Wisconsin corn harvest at 21%. And the five-year average on progress for corn in Wisconsin, 51% harvested. Soybean crop, 75% of the nation's acres have been harvested as of Sunday night, compared to the five-year average of 87%. In Illinois, 77% compared to the average of 91%. Indiana, 79% compared to an average of 86% by this state. Iowa, 80% of the soybean crop harvested compared to an average of 91%. And in Wisconsin, 62% of the soybean crop harvested. Normally, by this state, they'd have 58%. And 89% of the winter wheat crop now planted. Checking some of the topsoil moisture conditions, it may be a surprise. It kind of was to me. California had only 6.2 days of suitable field work last week. Arizona had 7 days of suitable field work. Pretty good weather in this part of the country. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. One more story before we leave you this morning. The Prada Fashion Group has signed what is billed as the first business loan in the luxury goods sector, linking the annual interest rate to practices that help the environment. Prada says the 5-year, $50 million loan with Credit Agricole Group will see interest rates lowered based on the achievement of ambitious targets related to sustainability. That includes the number of stores that meet defined standards for green buildings, education workshops for employees, and the use of regenerated nylon in collections. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, November the 5th, lots going on in the world of business today that could move the markets. International trade numbers are out today. We'll also get a look at the Red Book. Also, PMI services index is due. The ISM non-manufacturing index is due out as well. And JOLTS is coming today, the Job Opening and Labor Turnover Survey. A couple of Fed speakers as well, including Neil Kashkari and Robert Kaplan on monetary policy. And on the earnings calendar today, Mylan, Allergan, Peloton, Match Group, Univar Solutions, CD Global Solutions, Jones Lang LaSalle earnings, all coming today either before or after the opening bell. A few things that could move the markets on Tuesday, November the 5th.